sadhana for something that's beyond your capacity, that's a mistake. There's something mysterious about devotional service, and it's an important mystery, and that is capacity can expand by empowerment. Okay. You guys are doing a great job, and I think we're covered. You can... Go to the kitchen and see if they have a screwdriver or something, because this isn't working properly. Shishirata Damodar ki. I don't know if there's like a standard or dictionary definition of this. I often think of self-abandonment more in terms of relationships where someone else's needs and interests and concerns and their issues become my needs, interests, and concerns, and whatever mine are just disappear because I'm not even giving attention to those things that are really what I require. So kind of like living a shadow life of someone else's life. Or vicariously trying to fulfill someone else's unfulfilled desires. And meanwhile neglecting what's essential for one's own growth. Sadhana is certainly priority number one. Okay. There is suffering outside Krishna consciousness and suffering even inside. Relationship crisis outside and inside Krishna consciousness. So, is Krishna consciousness the only extent to which we can get close to permanent happiness? Or is it the ultimate also, for sure, I'm not sure what the question is asking. Yes, it's true that Krishna consciousness, in the process of, that's yours? Huh? Oh, okay. Okay. Do they come around when we come around? Or this is all the time? Do they like...
All the time.
It's not like they like crowds and they come around when there's a crowd. Maybe they get something to eat or something. All the time, okay. What I was told is that they've spread all throughout Juniata County. The peacock population has spread throughout the county. Heard that one from a local devotee. When we're in, whether it's inside or outside Krishna consciousness, it's when we're in an impure state, then there's suffering, relationship crisis, and so on. And Vaikuntha is where there isn't such a material contamination. And the process of Krishna consciousness is to take us there, which is Prabhupada sometimes likened to a person that's taking a shower because they're unclean, they're taking a shower. So the person that's unclean taking a shower is also unclean, like the person that has yet to get in the shower. But they're in the process of becoming free from that contamination. By process of Krishna consciousness, that's the intention. So, the question is Krishna consciousness the only extent to which we can get close to permanent happiness? Permanent happiness means Krishna consciousness, or our loving relationship with Krishna. So the answer is yes. Outside of our relationship with Krishna, is there permanent happiness? No. Okay. Do each of us actually really have a chance to go back to Krishna and be happy forever? Yeah. Prabhupada wasn't pretending or just making it up, make us feel good. It's for real. It's for real. This is an equal opportunity organization. There is weakness of heart even while praying to Krishna. What is the first step to strengthen our heart? First step to strengthen our heart. Well, ask yourself the question, what do you really want? And then you go down layers and layers and layers, and is really wanting to be in your relationship with Krishna what you really want? And the answer, if you're sensitive enough, the answer is yes. But the hesitation is because we're not in touch with what that deep want is. We're in touch with some other layer going away from who we really are, which is what self-abandonment is. The real self-interest is to be in relationship with Krishna. Experience that loving reciprocation with Krishna. And weakness is because we're at some other position of identification, what we want and what's important to us. And therefore our prayer to Krishna is weak. How do you vision the development of loving relationships amongst the disciples aspiring from the respective / different disciples of Srila Prabhupada, or say those who have different spiritual masters? Well, the language of the question is, you know, is it asking what is ideal and what should we work towards, or what is it in reality today? Who's asking the question? What should we work towards, or what's the reality today? Well, we're not at the ideal position. We're far from it, and even the far from it is far from it. You know, in other words, the being attached to my group is also, like, you know, it isn't healthy. And what Prabhupada wanted with the International Society for Krishna Consciousness during his presence and after his physical presence was not what it should be, when even during Prabhupada's presence. Didn't meet his standard of what Prabhupada wanted, of what he envisioned. So I'll give a little simple answer that, you know, we can go on all day speaking on this, or have a whole, you know, seminar for a week on this topic, and it's an important topic. But using the model of a family, how can a family have proper relationships with other families if within a family the relationships are debilitated? The answer is they're not going to. And so one of the first things that a family needs to do is strengthen, remove the obstacles and barriers and limitations and poor communication and all that stuff within the family. And the children, a child growing up in the family, should see that between their mother and their father, the two big people in their life, there's this harmony. And even if something arises, they know how to work it out, not behind a closed door screaming at each other, but they know how to work it out in a loving way. And that's growing up in a wholesome atmosphere. So it starts with the family. And then the mother and father and the child or children can have very nice relationships with other families. But when there's immaturity in the part of the mother and the father, certainly it's going to be there in the part of the child, it's going to be there in the family. You're going to have unwholesome relationships between families. Using that model, same. With Prabhupada is our, you know, Shiksha Guru for all of us. He's our Shiksha Father. Under his instructions, we are being sustained. And then, etc. So somebody who is whoever they are, Prabhupada disciple or Prabhupada follower, and if they have other persons who they're close with, then, you know, those relationships should be like within a family that's wholesome. Then those persons can have wholesome relationships, loving relationships with others. And that will naturally be trained in a family that's wholesome. It'll come out because it's natural. And they have the capacity. And it's genuine, it's not otherwise. Okay, I'm going to skip this one. What happens to souls who become inquisitive of what is life and what we are supposed to do, and that soul found out about Krishna without having any relationship with any spiritual master? This is what Bhakti Siddhanta calls working hypothesis. And he described the working hypothesis in a not very complimentary way. Useless. Prabhupada says just the opposite. When every living entity is born in ignorance, except Shukadeva Goswami, but living entities are born in ignorance, and even to know about the soul, or to speak of anything else, it requires to hear that from someone. working hypothesis. Goes over there. This morning during Mangalarti, I was feeling heavy, contemplating how would we have these most amazing long weekends when the spiritual master won't be here with us after some time. How can we make the most of physical presence while we have the great fortune of having it available? This is a nice thought. Not just spiritual master, but, you know, the person next to you, the persons who you value in life. It's one of the in the course of a number of Srila Prabhupada's disciples who left our association, physical association, Sridhar Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, and others who, Sadaputta Prabhu. I had this conversation when I was visiting in Alachua in December, and I saw Yamaraj Prabhu. And when I saw Yamaraj Prabhu, he looked like, you know, 50% Yamaraj Prabhu. And he was already very thin. He looked 50%. So I asked Yamaraj, I heard your health wasn't so good. And, you know, he threw the skeleton moved, and he said, I'm okay now, but my heart is very heavy. So I asked, you have a heart problem also? What's happening? He said, no, I'm missing Sadaputta so much. And I just can't get over it. Yamaraj. And just, you know, and Yamaraj is a quiet person, but he wasn't being quiet. He was being very expressive about, you know, I used to go every day to Sadaputta's home, and we would spend hour and a half every day just, you know, appreciating his genius. And I can't get over that Sadaputta is not around anymore. And he, you know, he kind of got choked up. So not a material attachment, it was, you know, that was a great source of spiritual sustenance for him. And it's gone. So there's some piece of advice that says, don't, when you have opportunity, be sure to take the opportunity, because to gain from someone's association, because you may not have that opportunity tomorrow. And one of the tomorrows, that's going to be true. So each one of us is gone. The medium of service is the best medium of sustaining association. Consider for a moment, person whoever asked this question, or those that may have thought the same thought, how is it possible that those who are disciples of Srila Prabhupada have been able to continue over all these years without any, you know, writing a letter or going somewhere where Prabhupada is, like we used to be able to do? Not available. How can someone sustain? And the answer is the medium of service, and the service begins with hearing. And so forth. So through that medium. And then it's not just memories, but it's It's something that's alive, vibrant. When you hear and describe, a little bit like, very much like Arjuna in the first canto of the Bhagavatam when he's returning from Dwarka and he's devastated, and Yudhisthira knows exactly why he's devastated, but he doesn't want to say it. But by speaking about Krishna and then remembering how, particularly, how Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita and what that message of Bhagavad Gita was, Arjuna becomes enlivened again. So it's by Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, then that sense of connection is restored or sustained. This other seems like a nice question, but I'm not sure how it's meant, since someone will have to volunteer what this means. Can you share some words on patience while extending to others on your behalf? What does that mean? You're at WashU and you're doing some programs and you're meeting people and having patience. Well, one of the very nice realizations about preaching is when it's fruitive, no one is satisfied. You're not satisfied. The other person is not satisfied. Krishna is not satisfied. One of the great ways to learn that is through book distribution. Right, Panchatattva? It's instant. You know, with college preaching, it's kind of long-term, slow pain. With book distribution, it's instant pain.
We're doing some of that as well.
Huh?
We're doing some of that as well.
Yeah. And maybe it's easier because, whatever the reason might be, easier. Like in the book distribution that devotees do today, it's passive, you're just standing at a table and people come up and then... But you know, when you're approaching people, if you're fruitive, Krishna doesn't like it. That's the main thing. Krishna doesn't like it. And you get some, not just no's, you get some really nasty remarks. You know, material energy gets heavy. With very experienced book distributors, there was this, we would sometimes have training, you know, how to distribute books, and someone would go and distribute books and a person would follow them. Sometimes, you know, really expert book distributors, two or three. So here comes somebody down the lane, whatever, you know, wherever the venue was, and here comes a devotee with a book distribution, but they're this transcendental bubble, so they have two or three people listening to them, and it's like they're not even there. And I remember this distinctly, without mentioning names of particular persons, but when it was just like this series of no's, no, no, like nasty no, get a job, get out of here, you... then the instant response from the book distributor was, this is because I'm being fruitive, and Krishna is indicating through this person that I'm being fruitive. And so I should just be doing this for speaking to the devotee, to the devotees with them. Just do this for Prabhupada. And then it's yes. It's just like an on-off switch. But it's not, oh good, I should be, you know, detached so I can get the fruits. Maya is very tricky. But, you know, it's the lesson of how to approach the service that you're doing. Patience comes from being Krishna conscious. If there's a result that's wanted, it's that Krishna is pleased. And Krishna will be pleased if people can hear. Whether they're, you know, standing in line to, you know, do something, like join the temple or come to your next program or whatever it is, or not. You know, we want to touch their hearts. But that will come from purity and being in the proper service mood. They're, you know, that's more attractive than anything you might say or do. Right. In devotional service, how can we take inspiration from others without competitive mood? Is that the word that's competitive? Competitive. Okay. Well, it takes purity. If there's you and a group of persons, and let's say, because Keshavacharya is not here, so we can speak about him. We can glorify him, and he won't be embarrassed. He sings so wonderfully, yes? So, supposing somebody else is a singer. Panchatattva is also a singer. I know Panchatattva. He's not thinking, oh, how come he gets to sing? I want to sing too. He's happy just to have someone else sing and being part of that kirtan. I've been in that position where you want me to sing. And, you know, when we meet a croak instead of your singing. So it's, you know, it's an appreciation for kirtan. You know, Krishna should be pleased by nice kirtan. Or, you know, you may appreciate, I appreciate his nice kirtan. I'm happy just to be where he's singing. It's so nice. And what's, you know, even if I could sing nicely, which I can't, Panchatattva can sing nicely, but I can't, he's happy just to be in that kirtan. So the way to overcome competitive spirit, which is your question, is through simply wanting that Krishna is pleased. Here's how Prabhupada describes this in the spiritual world. The gopis, he gives the example of the gopis. The gopis simply want Srimati Radharani to go forward to Krishna. Because they know that Radha pleases Krishna the most. And what do they want? That Krishna should be pleased. So they're pushing Radha forward. They're making all kinds of arrangements so that Radha and Krishna can meet. And Radha is thinking, I know Lalita is such a wonderful, has such love for Krishna. There's a pastime. One of the devotees I know had a painting made of the pastime where Radha asks Krishna, can Lalita swing on the swing too? So there's a nice Rupa Goswami pastime where Krishna makes a bigger swing. Or he has a bigger swing made. And Lalita's on one side and Krishna's on the other side. And the gopis are swinging Lalita and Krishna and Radha. And there's another pastime where Radha gets down from the swing and places another gopi on the swing so that Krishna can enjoy swinging on the swing with this other gopi. And then the other gopi gets off, and finally they all know Radha should be on the swing, so they put Radha back on the swing. It's just for Krishna's pleasure. Now in worldly dealings, that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. But so the competitive spirit on the spiritual platform is that in a maximum way Krishna should be pleased. Who can please Krishna the most? And then there's no envy. This girl dances the best. This girl cooks the best. This girl sings the best. She should sing for Krishna. She should cook for Krishna. And Radha is the best of all. But there's no competition. But there's inspiration. When the wish is that Krishna should be pleased. At whatever the cost, Krishna should be pleased. Okay, here's one of the classics. How to carry forward the mood that we gain from the retreat back home. So that every day I'm surcharged, just like here at the festival in Gita Nagari. We have a table downstairs, rechargeable batteries. Just plug them in and... Two or three things. One primary thing is advancement in Krishna consciousness is gradual. So the expectation of this kind of sangha will carry on the mood without the sangha is for very advanced devotees only. And so we can make gradual progress. So in our position, one of the things that can help sustain the mood is application. Of the things that you heard and the particular messages that inspired you and the personalities who are delivering those messages that inspired you and the mood of those personalities who are delivering those. So make note and apply those things in the mood of service, not only in the mood of what you can get from it, but in the mood of service unto those persons. Think about it in the reverse way. Supposing you're a good cook and you're giving a cooking class, and there's a number of students in the cooking class, and one of the students really wanted to get it down how you make a certain preparation, or how, like, let's say, I don't want to embarrass. Donna Kelly is cooking for a college program once a week, and she may have some people helping her, and she's got it to a point where she knows the palate of the people that she's addressing, and she makes things that are very sattvic and so on and so on and so on. So if there was someone that came every Monday morning to help her do that and could do it to such the same standard that she could do it, that would be the best. She'd be very happy. Not only the person is helping her, but now that person has learned how to make such nice things and can do that same thing for Krishna. That would be very nice. Well, if you were trying to share something with somebody, and the somebody got it, and they internalized it, and they lived their life accordingly, that would be very nice. So that's how you can carry this mood, is application. But application in the mood of devotion is how there'll be effective and sustained application. Sometimes it feels like, you know, filling up a bucket that's got holes in it. And you're walking along the path, and before you know, the bucket's empty again. Go back and fill up the bucket. Walk along the path, the bucket's empty again. Maybe you better put some plugs in the holes. So the inattention is part of the process of learning or growing in Krishna consciousness, continue to pay attention to Krishna. Because the topic has been about loving relationships, and loving relationships means loving relationships starting with Krishna. So pay attention to your loving relationship with Krishna. And then that mood will stay. It will fill other activities rather than leak out like the bucket with holes in it. Out of the things that I've gone over so far, is there somebody that would like to follow up on any of the questions, answers, or just keep going? Like expand on one of the points? Yeah.
How to not bring garbage or other outside things into our devotional activity, or when we come to a retreat like this, how to leave those things behind and just focus on what's happening here?
We have a showroom right down there. Place everything at the door. Then come in. Conditioning comes with us, and when we go back out, conditioning will resume. Part of the idea of the very word or the concept of a retreat is just as you said, retreat. Norms, you know, the routine, you leave behind. So one of the, although it's a distance to come to Gita Nagari, part of that distance means, you know, we're just leaving stuff behind. And even if there are things occupying our mind, it's best in a retreat to not, you know, keep plugging into it. Although there's some things we have to maintain, just to be responsible. But retreat means a break and reset and refresh and take a whole new look at things. So that intent is good. So therefore, leave things at the door. You know, do purposefully. As purposefully as we leave our shoes. We leave those worries and troubles and conditioned stuff and look at things afresh and anew. And then, so this other question of now going back, because conditioned tendencies, if we're not attentive, it will happen very quickly, even on the car ride back, what to speak of when you hit home base and then you go to work tomorrow. It'll be, you know, business as usual. So how to carry that fresh outlook? It's, you know, application and devotion and gratitude. The relationships that have been established, you know, take one of Keshavacharya's CDs home with you and listen. No, seriously, it's not just a promotional advertisement. It's carry that appreciation with you. Plug in. Or what you know, some select some particular things that particularly inspired, and you carry that, and that will displace the conditioning. Thoughts that would otherwise be filled with stuff can be filled with wonderful kirtan. Etc. Okay. Any other continuation points, or I'll just move on? Okay. We find that Krishna uses the devotees that are closest to us and near to us as instruments to give us love as well as purification. Over a period of time, I find that I begin to become weary of such close devotees because I appreciate intense, difficult times of my purification with them. weary because you appreciate. I associate intense, difficult times of my purification with them. Okay. How to maintain openness and enthusiasm in such relationships, especially close family members, my husband, etc. Well, this reminds me of one of the other questions and answers about what do you really want? If what one really wants is a relationship with Krishna, it's like Prahlad Maharaj praying to Lord Srinadeva, please remove material desires from my heart. Please leave me with just my relationship with you in a position of true loving exchange. So we may not be specifically praying like that, but when we want to love and be loved, that's the same thing. It's, you know, it can't be with the blockages, the obstacles and the filters and the, as the prior questions, the stuff that we carry. So who are we going to have a relationship with where through the medium of that relationship that stuff's going to go away, except persons that are close to us? We're not going to even allow people close to us unless it's people that we're trusting. And as far as, so the particular word that you used is weary. From what I've seen, of course it goes in waves, and sometimes less, sometimes more, but I trust Krishna. Krishna knows what we can handle, and I'm not going to script Krishna. So what's the alternative? The alternative is seclusion or impersonalism. And that's, we know that routine too well. It's not satisfying. In the past couple of months, in the course of just dialogue and conversations with devotees, I've asked, who is that person who you feel is a real close friend, someone that you can confide anything in? And several persons, three or four persons, have said, with all seriousness, I can't think of anybody in my whole life I've had that kind of relationship with. That's something to be concerned about. You know, it'll keep one from being weary, but it'll also keep one from growing. And sure enough, those individuals, their growth is less than others that have a very strong relationship with those who are very dear and confidential to them. I've stated this in the past, but as a sannyasi, I have the opportunity to, it's my service to go here and there, and I, you know, visit certain places on a regular basis. So I have the opportunity, like, you know, it's a little snapshot, and then some time passes, and a little snapshot, a little time passes, and some snapshot. So I can see change over time more easily than persons that are in that situation, because they're just living with it, they don't even see it so much. So I've noticed that where relationships with persons that are very close to that individual and where the relationships with those who are very close are very strong, especially those that are guiding or leading them or advising them, someone who they look up to. When those relationships are very strong, that person advances very quickly. So, advancing quickly may mean there's a lot of stuff that get, as you say, purification that gets dealt with. But the result is a much happier person and a much better instrument of Krishna, which makes us a happier person. Because we can be of service to Krishna rather than our own stuff. So, if you look at that, and not just the intense, difficult times of the purification, but the result of that, I mean, hearing the series, it's like having a good physician. You know, I like feeling well, but I don't like the medicine. Been listening to a series of lectures where Prabhupada speaking about the early verses in the sixth canto, chapter 1, where Maharaj Pariksit is very wisely describing that the process of atonement is inadequate because it doesn't remove the desire for sinful activity. So he gives the example, you know, if you go to a physician, the physician, depending upon the severity of the disease, will prescribe some medicine. And the person may think, oh, I don't want to take that bitter medicine. I have bad thoughts associated with the doctor because the medicine is bitter. But it's the wellness, look at that side. And the medicine appears to be bitter just because of the diseased condition. Otherwise, it's not. How to be more accepting of purification? That's a similar idea. Once again, looking inside, and what is it that I want? Do I really want a loving relationship with Krishna? Or is this something I'm saying because, you know, you're supposed to say yes to that question? Do I really want that? And if there's strong yes, then I'm ready to pay the price to get that loving relationship with Krishna. Something? Yes?
Maharaj, I have a question. Kind of related.
You have a question about the question? A question related to the question?
Yes, Maharaj. Actually, part of you were talking about strong relationships. I asked a question about that.
They're louder than you. The strong relationships with?
No, just about strong relationships. My question is how do we. It's kind of a sense. I'm from San Diego. So the question is. How do we gauge whether the relationship is strong or it's weak? In the sense that different people, they have different ways of looking at a relationship. Like for example, a quiet person might consider a particular relationship to be strong, like a more extroverted person might think, you know, it's not really strong or whatever. So how do we gauge? Are there like baseline things that you can look at and say that, okay, this relationship
is strong, or this relationship is not quite there
yet.
I
was just confused about this one. Can you clarify?
He has such college questions.
Yeah. What's a
lab
test?
Yeah. Just as far as the example that you used, a quiet person and a extroverted person. I've seen many extroverted persons that have such shallow relationships, and some very quiet persons that have such deep relationships. So the measure has nothing to do with introverted or quiet and extroverted or, you know, not quiet. Just use Prabhupada's formula. Love and trust, give and take. That's the litmus test. It's not how many words or even what words. A non-verbal communication can be very loud and speak volumes. Where an individual feels safe. I feel safe in this relationship. And as that feeling of safety and trust grows, that's a strong relationship. It doesn't have to be loud. And a measure of that is this give and take. They're able to graciously receive, at the same time generously give. Generously doesn't mean quantitative, it means without any consideration for oneself. That kind of generous. Is this from you? Should I take this one next? Okay, this is. Please turn over. I'll just take the ones that came in first. Okay on that one? Due to unpleasant experiences in relationships, even after experiencing and realizing the sweetness of the loving exchanges in this unique relationship, or some unique relationship, when there is some external behavior resembling my past experiences, I get carried away and become disturbed. This sometimes prevents me from opening the heart. How can I overcome this tendency and not see this special relationship without material vision, or not see it with material vision? There's an emotional and there's an intellectual component. The intellectual component is seeing this from that. The power of discrimination is seeing one thing from another thing. And this person is not that person. Although they may be dressed in blue, they're not the same as the other person dressed in blue. You know, it's just external. But what resemblance is external. But look more deeply to the person within. That external. Come to the spiritual platform. And then on the emotional side or affective side, when some feeling arises, there's different things that one can do. But there's this phrase that says, stay with the feeling. Like, where's that coming from? Like something, I'll just share a personal experience with this. When I started reading Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, compared to the other Bhagavad Gitas I was reading, I thought, this is wonderful, I can understand it. Not only I can understand it, it's wonderful, the message is wonderful. And some time passed, and then I started reading, you know, further into chapter 1, Bhagavad Gita, and this battle was about to begin. And I was getting angry. And I even said some bad things. I said, I don't care who this person is. He's advocating fighting and killing. Forget it. But then it was such an angry expression, I paused and said, where's that coming from? I'm just reading a book. I'm getting angry. What's going on? So it's, the phrase is stay with the feeling. Where is that coming from? I know what it is. I got an issue with Krishna. And that's why I'm in the material world. Because I have an issue with Krishna. That was like, you know, before I even visited a temple, I was had this understanding. I got a problem in my relationship with Krishna. That's why I'm getting angry. I better not put the book down, but I better address my attitude problem with Krishna. Now, why do I have an attitude with Krishna? Besides, you know, whatever he's recommending or not recommending, what's the attitude problem? So, there's ways, that's one, there's ways by which one can separate, you know, intellectually separate this person is different than that person. Here's the characteristics of this person. This characteristic, this characteristic, this characteristic. There's reason to trust this person. And because I see red, doesn't mean, you know, it's fire. Although, some time ago I got burned by fire. Doesn't mean that's fire over there. Just intellectually, and then finding some negative emotion, what that is, and where it stems from. And then it can be uprooted. In favor of the... So this is like the modes of nature competing for supremacy. What do you do when there's a mode of nature that's a dark one that's pushing? You don't give energy to it. You withdraw energy from it by placing energy or placing consciousness upon the Supreme. Okay. Easy to say, right? I understand that connecting with the heart means with feelings. Means doing with feelings the activities or services I'm rendering. Since I actually don't have any real feelings, I have the habit of offering prayers before doing any devotional service. Sometimes I feel, there's a feeling, sometimes I feel, the prayers are becoming mechanical. How to access the heart and do things from the heart? Well, when you're offering prayers that feel mechanical, stay with that feeling. My dear Lord Krishna, I'm offering prayers to you, but there's no feeling at all in my heart. You feel that, you know, you feel that feeling. And I wish it was not that feeling. That's another feeling. And stay with it. Just like Mahaprabhu offered his prayer. Durdaivam idrisha mahajani naduraga. That's a feeling. I have no attraction. My chant, I know the glories, and my chanting is mechanical. With feeling, I'm expressing them and calling to Krishna in that way. Okay. I'm not able to understand something about chanting. I heard that I have to chant with feeling. Here we go. And also hear the holy name. But in my case, it is happening so when I'm chanting with feelings, I'm getting carried away by those feelings. I'm not aware of whether I am hearing the holy name or not. Whoa. Well, could you kindly describe what should I take it as important or focus on? The focus should not go upon the feelings, the focus should go upon the holy name with feelings. So, we like to be enjoyers. Too much we like to be enjoyers. And so, if a nice feeling comes, we got our surfboard up and we're riding the wave. One of the, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes this as one of the types of unsteady bhakti, or anishtita bhakti. And that type of unsteadiness is when there's a small success, spiritual success, one tries to be the enjoyer of that, the happiness of that small spiritual success. And then you lose your focus upon what brought about that success. Success was simply service in a humble mood. And instead I'm in this enjoying mood. Even if it's not enjoying material sense gratification, but it's enjoying being the enjoyer of a small spiritual success. It's not that we're advocating, or our acharyas are advocating dryness, but we're advocating service, and in the mood of service, spiritual happiness will come. Spiritual feelings will come. So chanting should be done in such a way that regardless of the happiness that we're experiencing when chanting, or the absence of happiness we're experiencing when chanting, our focus is going to calling Krishna's name. When we were here for the last japa retreat, Badahari was with us. I asked his permission if I could share this, so I'm sharing it. We were staying at the Institute House together, and it was the next morning coming down from Mangalarti, I think, after the 64 round day. So just conversation, I asked him, how did it go, your 64 round day? And his voice was very grave, and he said, it was a desert. I said, excuse me? It was so dry. Badahari is Mr. Juicy. Rasgulla personified. And Glubjaman. Just squeeze him and juice comes out. It's Mr. Juicy. And on the holy name in particular. And I've seen... chanting makes him so happy. But he was saying in a very grave voice, so... So Then he paused, and, you know, we continued driving, and he said, but I didn't, you know, something to the effect, I can't remember the exact words, but something to the effect that I wasn't getting discouraged at all. I just understood that's part of the path I have to travel to reach Krishna, to actually get a taste for the holy name. I thought, wow, if that's what he's got to go through to get the taste for the holy name, what might we have to go through? And you all might be thinking the same thing yourself. Whoa. But it wasn't, there was no diminishing of faith or even enthusiasm. It just was, that was the experience. And his happiness was not based upon, or unhappiness was not based upon the experience, because his commitment to the holy name. Then he, it lightened at the end and said, the last some number of rounds, they were very good. Didn't elaborate, just said they were very good. So, when you, just like a relationship with another person, when you commit unconditionally to a relationship with the other person, it's an unconditional commitment. It's not like, you know, today I feel like this towards you and tomorrow I feel like that towards you. It's an unconditional commitment. And same with the holy name. If the chanting of the holy name is to restore our abandonment of our relationship with Krishna, if there is a little bit of a hard time on the path, or even the other way, if there's some nice happiness that comes, that's not the essence of the relationship. The essence of the relationship is, I'm the servant and you're the master. You can do with me what you like. That's the relationship of us to Krishna. And when that commitment is there, it's all nectar, even the desert. You know, for somebody that's advanced, like Bhattacharya's advanced, it was not, he wasn't discouraged. Wasn't feeling down. He was grave about, you know, the commitment I need to make to the holy name. And as much commitment as he has, that was, it was his expression. So we can be aware of, or as they say, tuned in to the feelings that we're feeling as we're chanting. We chant with feeling doesn't mean we lose the holy name. It's the feeling only. It's the holy name. But with some expression of feeling from the heart towards Krishna, whatever that is. Okay, time is flying. Any additional points on something that's come up so we can cover that? Srimadika?
This last question. I'm not clear how to chant with the feeling of Krishna, please accept me, and at the same time focus on the sound of the holy.
I don't find any problem doing it. So I don't know how to describe the, you know, getting over the problem. Rather, Keshavacharya, I was not here for the last retreat when you took them on a meditation. But do you recall what that exercise was? You were preparing them, you know, prior to a kirtan to meditate on, chant with a certain mood. Do you recall that? Yes. Not even necessarily what the particular meditation was, but do you recall doing that? Okay. The feedback that I got from the persons that attended that session, they were in, you know, the audience, not just one person, the audience were in tears. It wasn't just, you know, it was chanting with feeling. It didn't take them away from the holy name. It was the quality of the chanting of the holy name. So it's the focus is like, you know, the point of the pin, and then the shaft of the pin, and then the head of the pin. The point is Krishna, the holy name. And behind the holy name is what's, you know, pulling the thread, is the shaft. That's the quality with which we chant. The sense of dependence, like Prabhupada would, a child calling for the mother. That's got some feeling involved in it. And, you know, the object is the mother, but the feeling is certainly there too. So it doesn't, one doesn't eclipse the other. Feeling doesn't eclipse the object. Yes?
We were staying on that, please accept the principle of agreement.
Yes?
One of the challenges I was facing was, it appeared that I was trying to fulfill some, lack of love in my childhood or some of the past things, rather than looking up to a loving relationship with Krishna. And this is a struggle I go through even with relationship with superiors, you know, wanting that fulfillment because I didn't get it earlier. So it's, that please accept me really resonated with me, both with the holy name and other primary relationships that I had. So it was really challenging to, you know, come above that needy platform to
Well, even from a spiritual platform, it's something that we require. It is a need. It's not, that's not material. You know, it's spiritual. But it's not, the material would be, there's an emptiness. The spiritual is, this is my, it's a positive my completeness is in relation to you. My completeness doesn't exist apart from you, and I've been trying apart from you. I turned my back on you and walked the other way, and I've been doing walking the other way for a long time, and now I'm coming back, and if you know, please accept me. I've been rude, mean, harsh, nasty, bad. So the please accept me is just a short phrase that encapsulates many things. It's a mood. But it, you know, it's distinct from what happened in my childhood and whatever all those other things are. It's my relationship with Krishna. All those other things are a consequence of turning my back on Krishna. So this is coming to the spiritual platform. The cry is not from the is from the soul. It's not from the wounded psyche. However, even if it gets misplaced and it's the wounded psyche calling out, that's another feeling. Stay with that one. And it'll, because the holy name is pure, it'll take you to Krishna. It'll take you to the from the soul platform. At least the potential is there. Okay. I'm looking at Sri Clock, and Sri Clock says we have time for one more question. Jagatananda? Yeah.
We don't go from point A to point B in a straight line.
Yeah.
And so the topic yesterday was seeming errors, and things may appear what they are not.
Yeah.
And of course, we could clarify.
Or the other way around also.
Yeah.
It may appear to be harsh, but in fact, it's love.
And then you gave a caution, of course, you gave examples for Krishna's pastime, for Chaitanya's pastime, to then draw it down to our level. But we are not on that level. They can be active in this case.
Okay, you're retelling the class. Now, what's the question?
Yeah. You were mentioning that sometimes the misunderstandings, they become a relationship.
Yeah.
So, how to not stay stuck with a misunderstanding?
I expressed, step back, look at the big picture. Who is this person? Is this person this particular experience, or is this person something else? What's the big picture? So then I can, in a detached manner, look at that particular experience and quite likely see it in a different way. Like, you know, here's a menu. The intention was X and I read Y. And it's just a misunderstanding. There's one possibility. Or there was a lapse. Or like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, such a person should be considered saintly. But I'm stuck on, you know, the spot instead of the saintly. So look at the big picture is that verse from Bhagavad Gita. Apichet sudharacharo bhajate mama ananya bhakta. This person is an ananya bhakta. That's who this person is. And even if there is, it's not just, you know, I misunderstood. It's a mistake. Still, how should I look at that person? I should look at the person the way Krishna looks at that person. Unless I've got a problem. And then the problem is my problem, not their problem. I shouldn't project my problem on them. Look at the big picture. Who is the person? What's the nature of this person? In a discussion with some devotee couple, the husband disclosed something that he hadn't disclosed to his wife in, you know, a long time. Something bad. And it was very painful for her. This very bad thing. But it was very easier, you know, she could manage the pain when she stepped back from the very bad thing and looked at the nature of her husband. It's not her nature of her husband is this bad person that does this bad thing, like consistently. That's not her husband. It's not the person. And there were the yeah buts. But that's not the nature of her husband. It's true, but that hurts. Okay, then it's a whole other thing than seeing her husband as the kind of person that does these things, these bad things. Not his nature. Some weakness, some time in the past, something bad, not his nature. And then, as the wife, I can assist my husband to, if that is a weakness that might happen again, because that was the fear, it might happen again, you know, give spiritual strength to one another in your relationship, and it won't happen again. Well, even if it's a recurring pattern, it's something that if you're committed to the relationship, you can help the other person get on the other side of that repeated pattern, provided there's a willingness to do so and to take the resources that will get one on the other side of that shortcoming or weakness or whatever it is. It's the commitment to the relationship based upon the person is worthy of that trust you invest in them. There's sincerity, there's that spark. And they're sincerely trying. Okay. The bell's ringing. I'm going to end. Bing. Thank you very much for coming to Gita Nagari. Look forward to seeing you again soon. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Prabhupada Maharaj.
Jai.